men do not have a time of the month. You know, time of the month. If they did, they might not continue to say about women who get in their faces, she must be on her period and things like that. But people still say such things, believing that menstruation, pregnancy, and menopause make women insane. No, says our next guest. Robin Stein DeLuca is the author of The Hormone Myth, How Junk Science, Gender Politics, and Lies About PMS Keep Women Down. Robin Stein DeLuca works as a research assistant professor in the psychology department at Stony Brook University on Long Island. She's published research on postpartum depression and childbirth satisfaction and delivered a TEDx talk called The Good News About PMS. Robin Stein DeLuca, thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
So PMS is an acronym that scares people of both genders. What do you find good about it?
Well, as the news that I have to tell people about it, that it really is not a widespread illness that most women are experiencing. There's this idea out there that the hormonal changes that naturally occur throughout the month for women can make them emotionally unstable. And we have very solid research that says for most women, this is not the case.
Yeah, the thesis statement is right there in the fourth paragraph of your introduction. Hormones don't make women crazy. And I think here's where we need to explain. You're drawing a line between physiological bumps and mental illness.
Absolutely. Yes, hormones cause some physiological symptoms. I mean, of course, some women get cramps. Some women get hot flashes from menopause because their hormones are changing. And I would even say that some women get emotional symptoms. But those emotional changes are well within the range of normal human behavior, and that it really hurts women to refer to those changes as a mental illness.
So you say psychologists have known this for a quarter century. So why is it not as well known as you think it should be?
Well, that is the question, because we have some excellent research on PMS, on postpartum depression, and menopause that very strongly tells us that hormones don't play a major role. But I think that the press is very much in love with stories that depict men and women as these extremely different beings and that describe women as biological, more earthy, more related to bodily functions than men. And it's an idea that people have a hard time letting go of.
So do you have some numbers to show? I mean, is there enough research to indicate how many people do feel some emotional wobblies with various cycles? And if there's also a set of numbers about people who have true mental illness that are triggered by these?
Well, I think for most women, there's a range of symptoms that they might experience. Of course, some women experience more physical symptoms than others. For others, it's just not a big deal at all in terms of menstruation. And I can tell you that for the much more defined version of PMS that psychologists developed, PMDD refers to premenstrual dysphoric disorder, and that refers to a feeling of unease or just not feeling right. And to be diagnosed with that disorder, a woman has to have 4 out of 11 possible symptoms. And that refers to feeling marked anxiety, irritability, or depression, as well as some of the physical symptoms that women get from menstruation. And they have to be to the degree that they're really disturbing, that they impact their functioning socially or professionally. And of that disorder, we know that somewhere between 3 and 8% of women experience that on a regular basis.
Right, which is a fairly low number, 3 and 8%. Not this broad view that here it comes that time of the month, or you're going to be crazy,
right?
Which seems that really does hold on, doesn't it?
I mean, there are some people who do have some sort of biological vulnerability to hormonal changes, but it's a pretty small minority.
We was reminded recently by talking to the author of a book about the eclipse of 1878 that at that time the prevailing view of science was that giving women too much education could damage their organs and their womanly functions. Do you see the hormone myth close in proximity to that?
Sure. I mean, that's related to it. As you say, there was this idea that if too much blood was needed for women to use their brains to think about education in any terms, advanced math, that would take away blood flow from their reproductive organs and it would threaten their fertility. And fertility was thought to be the most important thing that a woman could provide. So that's certainly a piece of the history of how the hormone myth developed.
I don't want to blame this all on men, because you point out in the book that even women hesitate to consider the evidence that hormones don't rule their lives.
Yes, that's a good point. And I would suggest that one reason for that is that women have heard this message throughout their lives. Several years ago, I was on a playground, and there was a 7-year-old girl who was acting cranky, and her mom says, "Oh, I can't believe she's PMSing already." And that's ridiculous, and it's terrible that she's already laying it on her that there's something about being female that is going to make you less than, make you annoying. And women get messages from so many other places. You can't walk by a women's magazine that isn't telling you 85% of women experience PMS, but then when you look at the article, it says 85% of women have one symptom of PMS, and that doesn't mean anything. So I think women have been bombarded with this message that their hormones play a major role, and it's hard not to pick it up.
All right. We'll talk more about the hormone myth. That is the title of Robin Stein DeLuca's book, subtitled How Junk Science, Gender Politics, and Lies About PMS Keep Women Down, back on the Jefferson Exchange with the author and you in a minute 10. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on JPR's News and Information Service, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Our guest is Robin Stein DeLuca, psychologist working as a research assistant professor at Stony Brook University. She's the author of The Hormone Myth, How Junk Science, Gender Politics, and Lies About PMS Keep Women Down. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So, to specific instances here, menstruation itself, not pleasant, certainly, but what do most women tell researchers of it, that it is a problem in their lives, that it's not much of a problem?
I think for the great majority of women, they manage it. It's not that big of a deal. For most women, it could be 3, 4, 5 days. Emotionally, it doesn't cause mood swings that are any different from any other reasons you might have a mood swing, a problem at work or a problem in a relationship. So it's a part of life that most women don't complain of as having a major impact on their emotional health.
There's an interesting story in here of Lita Hollingworth and how long she studied the effects of the menstrual cycle. What did she find out?
I think it was in 1912, did studies on women's cognitive abilities, how well their thinking is, their memory, and did that change depending on the time of the month you were in. But she found no differences. And research has been very consistent over the years, finding that menstruation doesn't affect the quality of women's thinking.
All right, and we'll get to where pregnancy deals with that and the idea of the pregnancy brain fog in just a few minutes. But with menstruation itself, there's obviously not just science involved here. There's also popular culture. You know, be thin, be pretty, never talk about your period. Is this all of a piece?
Yes, absolutely. And I think one of the great shifts that we're seeing is that young women are talking differently about their periods. There's this whole movement toward period positivity and viewing it as a sign of health, and acknowledging the great power it represents to be able to make a whole person.
How much do you think it might help if men were involved in some honest discussion about menstruation? I mean, I ask this because I'm aware of men who would not even touch their wives while they're menstruating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the more demystified it is, I think the better for everyone, and it's easier to not rely on culture and folklore and jokes to make your conclusions about how this part of life might affect the women in your life. So, yes, I think men could definitely benefit.
Another name to bring in here from research, Dr. Robert Frank in 1931. What did he do about menstruation and PMS?
Well, he came up with the term premenstrual tension. That was the beginning of popular thought on that this was a concept that even existed. And what's fascinating with that is, you know, psychological studies can really be influenced by the expectations of the experimenters. And at times when women were needed to enter the workforce, like during World War II, we saw studies published that found, oh no, menstruation, time of month, has no effect on women's abilities. And then when men came home from war and needed to get their jobs back, suddenly we saw studies that found differences and said, oh no, no, women shouldn't be at work, they should be at home.
Huh. So from Dr. Oz to the New York Times, you've got claims of up to 85% of women suffering from PMS. Now, I think you were talking about PMDD a bit ago when you said 3 to 8%. And what are the figures on PMS?
Well, PMS is not actually a disorder. The manual for mental health professionals, the DSM, it's the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, there is no diagnosis of PMS. Over the years, when researchers have looked at it, they have included up to 150 different symptoms, which is crazy. You can't talk about an actual syndrome when there's so many different possible symptoms. If one of the symptoms is fatigue and headaches, then, you know, a man could have PMS.
I had it yesterday.
So it probably isn't accurate to use that acronym to describe what you had. So my point of view is that the research that was used to convince people that this was a syndrome was so fatally flawed that we should not think of PMS as an illness that exists.
Robin, you attribute a profit motive to the PMS and PMDD, that's premenstrual dysphoric disorder myths. Who profits the most?
Well, certainly pharmaceutical companies that can, you know, when women are convinced they should take a medication, whether it's an antidepressant or anti-inflammatory or even hormone replacement therapy, for all of their reproductive years, that's a huge windfall for pharmaceutical companies. But also physicians benefit, because when women are on these kind of medications, they have to have follow-up every 3 months, so that's a lot of doctor visits.
Okay, so let's move on. We're talking to Robin Stein-DeLuca about her book, The Hormone Myth, How Junk Science, Gender Politics, and Lies About PMS Keep Women Down. You can join us at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. I want to talk about just the ways in which society perceives a woman to be expressing something that is believed to be hormonal. The expression of anger, just plain anger, how differently is this perceived based on the gender of the person expressing anger?
Well, that's a great comment, great question, because people do have a hard time with women expressing anger, especially in the workplace. When men who are leaders express anger, they're taken seriously, and they are responded to, and they are respected. When women express anger, they are thought of as not nice, and there's pretty much nothing worse a woman can be than not nice. And people tend to not respond and not want to follow her and be committed to her. So this whole idea that womanhood is defined by being pleasant, acceptable, loving in her family at a moment's notice, that really limits women's power, what their opportunities are, and it kind of puts them in a box emotionally. I mean, everybody has all kinds of emotions.
So a double standard to begin with, and then a place to blame it, too, and it's down below.
Right.
Let's take a call. We have Lucy in Mendocino on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Robin Stein-DeLuca, the author of The Hormone Myth.
Good morning. I was wondering if you are familiar with hormone deception of modern products, in other words, products that have ingredients in them, in either their perfumes or their effective ingredients that mimic hormones, and whether those are having an undue amplification, if you will, of people's behaviors. And I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Thanks for that, Lucy. Appreciate it.
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not that familiar with those kinds of products, but I think we certainly have to be careful with the regulation or non-regulation of a lot of supplements that we see out there that are not regulated by the FDA. So I think it's something women have to be careful about.
I guess we'll get into things like hormone replacement later on. I want to move on to pregnancy right now. I mean, hormones are obviously in flux, but how much?
Mm-hmm. Well, they actually go up quite a bit. Hormones are wonderful chemicals that facilitate all kinds of processes, and pregnancy is certainly one of them. There are hormones that go up substantially in the first couple of months of pregnancy that support the formation of the placenta, and then there are other kinds of reproductive hormones that go up that increase the blood flow that a woman's body needs so she can nourish herself and the growing fetus. So absolutely, we do see a great increase of hormones over the course of pregnancy. But what we don't see is any kind of consistent change in thinking ability, in memory, in problem solving, things like that. Most studies don't find a difference, and the ones that do find very small differences. Unfortunately, those are the ones that get into the media.
Well, as you point out, the so-called brain fog of pregnancy, there's a big difference between what can be measured in objective tests and self-reporting.
Yes, yes. A lot of women, if they are forgetful while they're pregnant, do chalk it up and say, oh, it must be, you know, this baby brain thing. But the reality is we all forget things all the time. But when you've got this idea that there's this condition that is out there and that is inevitable, you're more likely to chalk up a memory lapse to it.
Now, it's outside of the brain, just this view that women are impaired by pregnancy and really have to, you know, do things very differently. I mean, that manifests in many ways in our society, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely. The EEOC reports that women have submitted complaints that they were not hired, they were not promoted, they were discriminated against because they were pregnant. And research shows that colleagues and bosses tend to have different and lesser opinions of women when they are pregnant.
Lesser opinions as in they're not as good, or they're mad at them because they got pregnant and they have to take a leave, or what?
No, that they think they're not. First, they think they're not going to be committed, they're not going to stay, which is a fallacy because 75% of women who are pregnant do come back to their jobs. But they also think they have to curtail that person's workload. They just don't see them as competent.
And I've heard this term before, the medicalization of pregnancy. What does that mean?
Well, it refers to thinking of pregnancy as a sickness rather than a normal human reproductive occurrence, and that because it's seen as a sickness, you've got to have lots of interventions. You've got to have a lot of testing, a lot of doctor visits, and then eventually that translates into childbirth and more technology, which has not always shown to be advantageous to the health of the mother or the child.
Well, you point out for one thing in the book that there are many scans now, ultrasounds of the babies. I mean, how does that tend to average out in most pregnancies now?
Well, I'd say about 20 years ago, doctors were doing maybe 1 to 2 sonograms per pregnancy, and now they're doing 7 to 10. And there is no increase in detection of abnormalities. There's no increase in the health of the mother or the baby. And as far as we know, they're neutral, but it is the application of heat to the mother's belly, and so we're not exactly sure of what the consequences might be. So that's something that we've seen gone way up.
So if we return to thinking of pregnancy as natural and not treat it so much like an illness, what kinds of changes would that result in?
Well, I think women would probably feel more confident about what's going on with their bodies. Pregnancy health care would become cheaper. So, you know, we hear a lot about how health care costs are so out of control and that that's a national issue. So I think if doctors didn't feel the need to do such excessive testing, that it would give women more confidence and it would be better economically and health-wise.
We're talking to Robin Stein-DeLuca, a research assistant professor in the psychology department at Stony Brook University on Long Island. She's written a book called The Hormone Myth, How Junk Science, Gender Politics, and Lies About PMS Keep Women Down. You're welcome to join us on the Jefferson Exchange. We have a few minutes left with Robin at 800-838-3760 by phone. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So we've obviously still people concerned in the workplace about women's commitment to the job. EEOC has to get involved sometimes. How then find the space responsible both to mother and baby on one hand and to job on the other?
I'm sorry, I'm not understanding what you're asking me.
How to make it clear to all the parties involved that a woman can be entirely devoted to herself and her baby and still care enough about her job to want to do it well?
Right, that's a tricky question. That is a tricky task when people have these so ingrained ideas. I think that women have to be as upfront as possible with their employers about what they plan for, what they feel capable of. But I think women also, it goes the other way. Some women are so afraid of revealing any kind of weakness. I mean, pregnancy can cause nausea, some swelling, some physical difficulties that might make, for example, traveling difficult. But there are so many women who take it to the other extreme that they don't complain. They do double the work. And that's not great for women either. So there's got to be some in-between where we acknowledge, yeah, something physical is going on here, and maybe she needs some minor accommodations, but for the most part can be relied on to take care of her usual workload. So I would just love to be able to see employers and colleagues understand pregnancy for what it is and give their colleagues the room to experience their pregnancy, but to do their job like they very likely are able to do.
Let's take a call here. We have David in Medford on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Robin Stein DeLuca, the author of The Hormone Myth. Hi, David.
Thank you. Are you there?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. A couple of things. Robin and I appreciate you bringing things to light, yet I find with men and women both, especially at least on most levels, we seem very readily willing to play victim to things. Do you feel that maybe a lot of the groups of women are playing victim to being women and using whatever excuse they have to be the victim and hence using that victimhood to try to control and manipulate men's perceptions in the process?
You mean like I'm a victim of my hormones in this sense?
Am I a victim of my hormones? Am I a victim of being a woman? See, I'm a woman, so you should cater to me because of this, and because I don't like this treatment when I'm playing the victim, you should do this. And it seems to be a manipulation and control issue often, and it's bought into by both sides of the gender. I mean, both male and female buy into it and feed into it.
All right, let's see what Robin thinks of that. Thanks for the thoughts, David.
Well, that is a great question, and I think that there are many women who use PMS as a cover, as a get-out-of-jail-free card when they are cranky or irritable, because those expressions of emotion don't jibe with what we think of as a nice, good woman. Like I said, the ideal woman is someone who is always emotionally available, always positive, always there to take care of you. Well, maybe one day she doesn't feel like taking care of you. But if she doesn't, that kind of makes her a bad woman. So PMS, I think, has to some degree has become this free pass to express negative emotions that we wouldn't otherwise accept from women. But she still gets to hang on to her good woman crown.
Let's move on from, we had been talking about pregnancy, let's move into the postpartum issues, because you cite postpartum blues, postpartum depression, and postpartum psychosis. How frequent or infrequent is the psychosis part?
Postpartum psychosis is very rare. About 1% of women who go through childbirth experience it, and that involves hallucinations, delusions. It's a real psychotic break with reality. And those women need to be hospitalized, need to be treated. And we don't know a lot about why this happens to women because so few women get it. So it's tough to do studies. But the few things we know is that a previous psychiatric history puts a woman at risk for this, and also if there's a traumatic event like the death of the baby, that could bring something like this on, but it's extremely rare.
The Andrea Yates case captured a lot of attention. This is the woman who drowned her children and apparently was experiencing true postpartum psychosis. What's the key to understand, though, that was present in her case?
Well, she definitely had a previous psychiatric history. She had a history of postpartum psychosis with previous pregnancies. So looking at that case, there was a huge amount of pressure going on in her life. She was taking care of a dying father. She was taking care of 5 children. She did not have the mental capacity to deal with another pregnancy, and she had her 5th child. And it sent her over the edge, and it was just absolutely tragic. She imagined that she had Satan inside her, and she was going to threaten the souls of her children. And that the only way to save them was to kill them. Those are the delusions that she had. So it was just a tragic, awful story.
And an extreme case, obviously. But you urge, in general, a more realistic perspective on motherhood. And I wonder what that would include.
Well, I think that sometimes motherhood is hard. Sometimes it's messy. Sometimes you have no sleep. And so to always expect women to be able to glow and say, this is perfect and wonderful and fulfills me every day, we could take a little pressure off of women to feel like they have to have that, project that perspective all the time.
I have a sense that women come up to you after your TEDx talk and say, wow, you really blew my mind.
Well, the comment that I most likely got was, I wish my boyfriend was here because I really want him to hear this, that when I'm angry at him, it is very likely he did something to upset me, not that I have PMS.
Oh, great point to end on. The book is called The Hormone Myth, How Junk Science, Gender Politics, and Lies About PMS Keep Women Down. Robin Stein DeLuca works at the psychology department at Stony Brook University on Long Island, and she's been our guest today. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, take care.